We are joined today by Tuck Woodstock, whose work has appeared in the Washington Post, on NPR, and in the Portland Mercury. They are also the host of the podcast Gender Reveal. Tuck has been on the ground at the Portland demonstrations nearly every night since late May. Tuck, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course, thanks for having me.
Tuck, talk briefly about what has been happening in Portland and what you've seen at the nightly protests.
Oh gosh, it's had a few evolutions. It started as, you know, an outgrowth of the National George Floyd protests, the Black Lives Matter protests, which it still is, but it started at the same time as all of those other protests, and it was, you know, several hundred people, sometimes more than 1,000, gathering at the Justice Center, which is the Portland Police headquarters, every night to chant and hold signs and do other, you know, standard protest activities. And police often met that with use of force, including crowd control munitions and tear gas. And over time, the group that was dedicated to having that interaction every single night gradually grew smaller, till in early July, there were only 100 or 200 people that would, again, show up at the Justice Center every night. And around that time, the protesters began to realize that there were federal troops stationed in the federal courthouse across the street from the Justice Center. And so the interactions shifted away from Portland police and towards the federal agents, but the interactions were basically the same. It was still crowd control munitions, tear gas, bull rushing the crowd, making arrests. And then this national news story broke that these federal agents had picked up a couple protesters off the street and thrown them into unmarked vans. And suddenly that group of like 200 people coming out every night became 2,000 people coming out every night. And it became this huge national news story. And there was even more use of force than there had been before. And now that crowd is starting to go back down from thousands back into hundreds. So it's really just this ebb and flow where every night some amount of people are coming out and facing police brutality at the police brutality protests. And the thing that really changes is the police force that's doing it and the numbers of protesters that are there.
And what are your thoughts about Governor Brown's announcement that federal forces are slowly going to begin leaving the city?
I'm of two minds about it. I definitely don't think it's going to solve, you know, the broad aims of the protests. Like, the aims of the protests are to defund Portland police specifically, and disband Portland police specifically, and to protest police brutality generally. And the difference between federal agents, local agents, or state troops, you know, using crowd control munitions, tear gassing, and bull rushing the crowds, it doesn't really matter. Police is police is police in the minds of these protesters. However, these federal officers have in recent weeks seemed to really be even more violent than the other forces we've seen, and they seem to have much bigger budgets for increasingly escalatory tactics. And they also seem to have less accountability because the people they're accountable to are like sort of shadowy figures in the national government and are not, say, like Ted Wheeler or Kate Brown. So Portlanders had a lot fewer recourses to like petition for change. And so it in some ways, I think will be nice to have an entity that at least can be held accountable by our state government. That doesn't have infinite resources for like really gnarly, you know, crowd control tactics. But at the same time, again, like police is police is police and the protests are not going to stop.
So specific orders have also been given by judges that the Portland police and the feds who are supposedly leaving today can't arrest or attack journalists, medics or observers. Can you talk a little about what you've actually seen happening on the ground?
First, I want to clarify that it's it's a phased withdrawal, and so some troops will start to leave tomorrow, but it will be spread out over the next few weeks, and some federal entities are not leaving at all, so it's not as simple as, like, tomorrow, everyone will be gone, just to clarify for listeners, but yeah, so on the ground, it's been interesting. For me personally, the restraining order against the Portland police, specifically against arresting and assaulting journalists, has been helpful for me, but it has not been applied fairly and widely across the board. There have been multiple journalists that have been arrested. Andrew Jankowski was arrested by Portland police after the TRO, the restraining order, And as far as the feds are concerned, I don't think they have cared about it in any way, shape, or form. I have not seen any sign from federal officers that they have changed their behavior in any way due to the restraining order. So there are, ACLU is asking to have those officers and those entities held in contempt for violating the court order, but so far we haven't really seen any tangible change in the amount of observers, press, and medics like being assaulted and arrested every night.
National news organizations are talking about the violence that we're seeing from the police or the purported instigation by protesters through fireworks and water bottles and the like. What are some of the joyful aspects of these protests, like the mutual aid that we're seeing downtown?
Yeah, I love this question. So there, protesters have always found moments of joy in these protests. An example that always springs to mind for some reason is a couple weeks ago, before the national attention came in, when the crowds had really died down, but the federal troops were, skirmishing with a couple hundred protesters every night. And there was this one like Black Bloc comrade who went down to the 7-Eleven a block away and came back with a huge cardboard display of like, dozens of bags of chips. And was just like, hey, did you know that you could buy this whole chip display for $100? And just started handing out chips to everyone in the crowd. So everyone's eating, all these protesters are eating chips. Later, he comes back with a second display and he's handing out more chips. And then it becomes really surreal because the federal officers come out, push everyone out of the park. There's this standoff where all of the protesters are on one side of the street, all of the federal agents on the other side of the street, and this guy shows up with like a third thing of chips and is just handing chips out on the front line. So there's always been these like moments of joy and levity, where there are people like singing and dancing, even if they're wearing gas masks. There are people, drumming even on the front lines and dancing on the front lines. Everyone like tries to really hard to show up for each other, and sometimes the chants can get really silly. Or there was one time when protesters were throwing animal feed at the fence, and like that wasn't intended to like harm anyone. It didn't even make it all the way to the fence. It was more meant like as a joke. And so yeah, I think people are really just trying to find community and joy and levity anywhere they can get it, because they're in the middle of both, this battle against the police and a pandemic at the same time. So it's hard to find moments of joy.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We're seeing people being really quite safe downtown as well. Like most everyone is wearing masks and goggles, if not gas masks. So something that really stands out to me is that protesters are out there every night with this incredible regard for life, while the hand of the state, which has this immense power, seems to have little or no regard for the safety of protesters or people living in Portland in general. I'm wondering if you can speak to that power imbalance a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely wild to see, both Portland police and these federal agents, especially using tear gas in the middle of a, respiratory pandemic that attacks the lungs and is spread by coughing and spitting and those kind of things. Because when that tear gas rolls in, what happens is everyone's lungs get real messed up. I have really healthy lungs, and the first time I went out without a gas mask, my lungs were affected for like 2 to 3 days afterwards. So, everyone's lungs are messed up. But then also, like the reaction that your body has when that happens is you start coughing and you start spitting and you start throwing up. And so suddenly everyone around you is coughing in the middle of a pandemic. And like they know that they're doing that, right? Like they know that's the effect. So they know that they're hurting people's lungs. They know that they're making people cough on each other. And that's just like the indirect harm. There's also the direct harm of literally shooting people between the eyes. Like multiple people have been shot by local, county, and federal agents with crowd control munitions. And that's not how crowd control munitions are made. They are not made to be aimed at the head ever. And so there is this really wild imbalance between the harm that these institutional powers are perpetrating versus the protesters who, like, yeah, I cannot say that like none of them have ever tried to harm an officer, because I haven't had eyes on them all the time. But I can say that like 99% of them are standing and chanting, Like you said, they may throw plastic water bottles, where if you've ever seen a plastic water bottle hit someone with a full riot gear on, it does nothing. It's like nothing has happened. And yeah, they are throwing fireworks, which I think is like one of the more damaging things that they've done. But, you know, like I said, like 99% of the people there are not doing any of those things, and they're still getting tear gas and they're still getting hit with munitions as well.
Yeah, and people around the country continue to be shocked by what's happening, understandably, but I'm seeing a lot of questions on the internets, like, why won't anyone do anything about this? Or how can this be happening? Which to me is like this cry for accountability. What is your take on that line of questioning?
I think a lot of people are trying to do something about this, but unfortunately, like the power is so concentrated, and especially with these federal agents, the power to decide what happens has largely lied with, you know, the president and William Barr and Billy Williams and all of these like sort of national entities who have absolutely no interest in, you know, police reform or going softer on protesters. You know, they're describing the protesters as violent Antifa, right? So it is yeah, these people have no interest, and unfortunately, like these small groups of people, the people I mentioned, plus Homeland Security Acting Secretary Chad Wolf, like they have absolutely no interest. And as long as they have no interest, it's really hard to hold these people accountable. But what we can do and have done is hold the, you know, state and local officials and officers accountable, right? And so like we're not seeing as much change as protesters would like, for sure. Like they demanded a $50 million defundment of PPP, and they didn't get anything close to that. But they are seeing incremental steps being taken by city council and other entities, and those actions weren't being taken before these protests, and they're being taken now. And so, like, it is painfully slow and painfully incremental, but things are changing, and people are trying to make things happen on the ground.
You mentioned a little bit earlier that police is police is police, meaning that all of different departments are employing similar or the same tactics. And that's something that's really gotten lost in the national retelling of the story. Is there anything else that you feel like is getting erased or rewritten in real time?
That's a great question. I do think that the federal agents have been so brutal in the last couple of weeks, especially that everyone, you know, myself included, has somehow forgotten how violent and how disproportionately aggressive Portland police and other local entities has been. And I think that the other thing that's being rewritten is the idea that these protests were ever about the federal agents to begin with. Like these protests were always about Black Lives Matter. These protests were always about police brutality, like I said, police brutality broadly and Portland police specifically. And once these federal agents leave, there will still be people protesting about police brutality and Portland police. And so, yeah, I think it's really important to remember that, yes, the national news made this into a national story about like Donald Trump and how this affects his reelection campaign. And I get asked that a lot by national media, is why do you think Donald Trump is doing this? And I'm like, I don't know why Donald Trump does anything. Like, I'm watching Portland Police. Like, I don't know or care how this affects his reelection campaign. So yeah, I think what's most important to think about, especially for Portlanders, is that when this is all said and done, there will still be an issue with Portland police using excessive use of force, especially disproportionately with Black and Indigenous Portlanders. And like that's what cannot get lost.
Absolutely. Tuck, before we wrap up, are there any final thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
Oh gosh. I think it's really easy to get tired, and it's really easy to get disheartened, especially when you're seeing you know, protesters on the ground start disagreeing with each other more, and protesters on the ground getting like especially exhausted by, you know, it's been 2 months of this. And so yeah, I just think that sort of what I just said, but like really encouraging. Like it's not my business if protesters come out. I'm a journalist, but if you would like to maybe rethinking like what is my goal here and what am I trying to achieve and how can I best achieve that, and try not to get bogged down by all of the discourse that is happening around you.
Tuck, we really appreciate the work you do. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today.
Of course, thanks for having me.